You're listening to Life and Leadership, A Conscious Journey, the podcast that shares wisdom and strength. Join your host, Dr. Michelle St. Jane's weekly conversation on how to have a positive impact for people, planet, and the wider world. If you want to live a life of intention, be proactive with your time, and bring your vision for the future to life one today at a time, you are in the right place at the right time. Let's get started.
Martin Weeks is joining me today. Freemasonry is a thread that is woven throughout the colorful and intricate fabric of the globe. Martin, how did you get into the voluntary association sector?
Well, Freemasonry is a contributor to the voluntary sector, but it's an initiatory brotherhood. So it's like a fraternity. You have to be initiated into it, and you're a member for life once you're in. How do you get into it? You have to ask another Freemason. And I think that surprised me because I'd always thought that it was one of these things where someone gave you the whisper and said, hey, you can join. And so for years, I didn't join because I had no idea that I was supposed to go up to someone that I knew who was a Freemason and say, I'd like to be a Freemason. And it turns out that's what you do. And so that's what I did. And all of a sudden, although nothing, to be fair, nothing is done all of a sudden in Freemasonry. Everything is quite old-fashioned and takes a long time because we do things pretty much the way they've been doing them since the 1700s.
Thank you, Martin. And it does. It goes way, way back. It really does. For Bermuda, I believe the first appearance was with the governor, Alured Popple, in 1738, who in Bermuda in 1744 became the Grand Provincial Master of the island. And then there was this amazing immersion to a remarkable level into many aspects of government, civic society, and philanthropic engagement. In fact, many of the powerful and influential men in Bermuda were Freemasons, for example, governors.
I think in those days, all of those people were Freemasons all around the world, and as long as they were men, because in those days, there was no female Freemasonry. We're in a very different place nowadays. Of course, there is female Freemasonry, and there's also what's known as co-Freemasonry, where men and women can join. But in Bermuda, currently, we only have the male version, the old version, as you say. Back in the 1700s was the first time that it really became known here. And that was from Freemasons who had come from other places to live in Bermuda. There were no homegrown Freemasons at the time. The majority of Freemasons were either here in the civil service or in the army. And so we had a lot of Freemasons operating in small groups. And it wasn't until the mid-1700s that someone said, we should have a lodge here for all the Freemasons that come and go. And the first lodge was founded up in the west end of the island where the Royal Naval Dockyard was. And I would guess that it mainly catered to people who were working in the dockyard and were military men elsewhere in the island. And it wasn't until later in the 1700s that people down in the capital, down in St. George's, which is, for those who aren't familiar with Bermuda's geography, the very furthest point land-wise from the Royal Naval Dockyard, that someone said, we're fed up with rowing our boat across from one end of the island to the other, because it's pretty much the only way you could get around in those days. Let's have a lodge in St. George's. Do you want me to go on with a little bit of that history?
That would be fabulous, Martin.
In the mid-1700s, so we're talking about around the 1780s, the people who were already Freemasons, and they were Freemasons from England, decided they wanted to have a lodge in St. George's. And so they wrote away to what was known then as the Grand Lodge of England. There was a bit of a schism in the Grand Lodge of England later on, but at that time there was just the one. And they said, we want to have a lodge here in Bermuda. So they wrote that, they put it on a ship, off it went to England. Months later, they still hadn't heard anything. Getting a little fed up with that idea, somebody suggested, and I actually have a copy from the archives of the minute of the meeting that they held to decide this. Someone said, why don't we write to the Grand Lodge of Scotland and see if they'll give us a charter, because England doesn't seem to care about us. So they wrote to the Grand Lodge of Scotland. And a few months later, the postmaster in St. George's received, apparently, according to the legend, two packages, one containing a charter from the Grand Lodge of England for St. George's Lodge and one charter from the Grand Lodge of Scotland for a St. George's Lodge. The rumour and the legend, if you like, is that the postmaster was a Scotsman. And so he produced the Scottish Charter and handed it over to the Brethren of Lodge St. George, as they are now, and they took up that charter and became a Scottish Lodge. Shortly after, a few weeks later, he handed over the English Charter, which left them in a bit of a quandary, because all of the Masons who had joined the new Lodge in St. George's, the new Scottish Lodge in St. George's, were in fact English Masons. And so they now had a charter from England, which would have been their preference. So what they decided to do was the pragmatic thing and run two lodges. And so they ran two lodges for a little while. And I think in 1801, the English Lodge decided to move to another part of the island. They moved to Flats Village, which is somewhere in the middle. And then later on, they moved to Hamilton, where they still operate as a lodge known as the Atlantic Phoenix Lodge.
Thank you, Martin. And I appreciate you bringing up that Freemasons were members of more than one lodge. I have an example from my historical research where John Fisher was the master of the Atlantic Phoenix and the master of St. George Lodge, now known as Your Lodge 200, as well as crossing over a few other positions of power. Yeah, so we have all three, don't we? We have the Irish, the Scottish, and the English, right?
In Bermuda, we have three constitutions.
Which is very unusual because, yeah, nowhere else in the world do they do that, do they?
You will find it in that there'll be one or two in most places. You don't always see all three. And in some cases, like in the Bahamas, you'll see all three, and also Prince Hall lodges from the States are represented as well. So the Caribbean tends to be a bit of a melting pot for Freemasonry. A lot of that's because it happened very early on, because this was a stopping off point for the ships and the troops as they went around the world. And so Freemasonry started here quite early. I mean, Lodge St. George, which was chartered in 1797, eventually, that's when the actual charter arrived, is the oldest Scottish lodge outside of Scotland that still operates.
Yes, exactly. Interestingly enough, a fellow researcher of mine reviewing Bermuda protests between the years 1725 and 1750 in the Bermuda archives, actually, I was looking for when the word was first published, and a Masonic historian, Gould, noted the term Freemasonry didn't appear until 1755. But in our archive, apparently, there was a British sloop called Freemason, whose captain was John Adams, who'd filed a protest, number 261, if you need it, on August the 8th, 1751, clearly demonstrating the use of the word back then. So that is at least 4 years before the dictionary. Furthermore, Thomas Godet, a warden for the Bermuda Lodge, Prince Alfred's Lodge, now known as, which is the Somerset one, was the master of the ship Freemason, and it is apparently they transported 32 French passengers who were refugees to New York in 1793 to be exchanged for British prisoners held by the French there. So the Bermuda, that sloop, was a frequent visitor to Bermuda and well involved in the island as well. So there's these wonderful little overlaps that, you know, for those of us who love history. So talk to me about Freemasonry in Bermuda. How did you become involved? Like, or why did you become involved?
Well, I'd always been interested in what it was, you know, because it was, as far as I knew, a secret society. So we're going pre-Google days, because this was the 90s, where you couldn't look something up like that, and access to the archives and stuff like that was not going to be an easy thing. So I knew it was old. I knew it was historical. I knew they met in the old State House, which is Bermuda's oldest stone building, which just to go in there would have been interesting. And so I started asking people, what do you have to do? How do you join? What's it all about? And got told that you can't find out what it's all about until you join. So I put my hand up and said, well, fine then, let's go. Let's do it. I tried the Kiwanis and the Rotary Club, and I have to say I didn't find that to be a lot of fun. I didn't go back. But Freemasonry I really enjoyed right from the start, and 20-something years later, I'm still enjoying it.
Fabulous. And part of I know there's multiple things that you do, but part of it is also philanthropy, which was how I ended up being involved. And I was quite curious to see that in England, they started a Masonic institution for girls, and it was established for education. And it was started in 1788. And according to Gould, again, the Royal Masonic, the historian, it was the reasons were for maintaining and clothing and educating children and orphans of indigenous brethren. And I see that, yeah, the Grand Treasurer in 1790 paid an annual subscription of £25 because it was a highly deserving charity. So Milbourne, another historian, said the prime object was to support these children of deceased or distressed Freemasons. But also there was a second object, and that was immigration. It was around getting women out to the empire to civilize the men of the colonies.
Yeah.
The benefit of the fellowship.
There are still patrons of those organizations. There's a boys' home, there's a girls' school, there's a Masonic nursing school, and you'll often see pictures of nurses, particularly the ones that are attached to the royal family, on their big silver belt, which was traditional to be worn of a nurse's uniform in the UK for many, many years. It's got a Masonic symbol next to the Star of David, and that's the Royal Masonic Nursing College, I'm going to say. So there's a lot of charities there. Like I said, a lot of the English lodges in Bermuda are still, to this day, patrons of those charities and still donate to them regularly. Scotland has its own charities, although they don't have quite the network of homes and for the old and children that the English do, because Scottish Freemasonry is a lot smaller than English Freemasonry.
Did you choose Scotland over England and Ireland for a reason?
Nope, I didn't know. That's quite common that people, I had no idea there was three different types of Freemasonry in Bermuda. I just thought it was all one, and I wanted to be in St. George's because I lived in St. George's for about 25 years. And so I joined, not knowing that I was an Englishman, because I'm from England originally, joining a Scottish lodge. But that's how it turned out.
True. And interestingly enough, given we've had an English queen for a lot more years than
British
we've had
queen,
a
British queen.
Oh, sorry, a British queen, a lot longer, I stand corrected, a lot longer than we've had a king. I find it really interesting, the chief patroness of the Royal Masonic Institutions and charity. And of course, now it is Queen Elizabeth, right?
Yes.
Yeah, very interesting. And I did want to add,
are very much tied in with Freemasonry. Prior to Her Majesty the Queen now, it's always been a member of the royal, a high-ranking royal member who's been the Grand Master. The current Grand Master is the Queen's cousin, the Duke of Kent. The previous Grand Master was Prince of Wales at the time. He became king and handed over the duties, because it was traditional that when you became king, you handed over the Grand Mastership to another member of the family. But it's always been someone in the royal family. And that's the same in a lot of countries. In Sweden, the current king is always the Grand Master Mason.
Thank you. Oh, I just love all this history. It's so fascinating. So let's sort of link now to sort of Bermuda philanthropy. How are the lodges or your lodge involved in terms of Bermuda philanthropy?
Well, each lodge is encouraged to do its own bit. I mean, for instance, during the COVID situation, Lodge St. George has put on, so far, two benevolent dinners for anyone who wanted to come and get a three-course meal for free. And we served, I think, a grand total of about 150 meals over the two nights that we did it. We're going to be doing it again soon down in the town, just serving out of the kitchen at the lodge. And all the other lodges have done similar things in their parts of the island. Our sister lodge, Summers Isles Lodge, up in Whitehill, they also did the same thing outside of their lodge. They fed as many people who were willing to come and get the food as they could. But all the lodges in Bermuda also belong to what's known as the Freemasons Fund for Bermuda. And it's a charity, registered charity. And that charity, every year, there's a board, which is all Freemasons, and they meet to decide who is going to get the money that we've raised each year. The only caveat is it cannot be a Freemason that gets the money. It has to go to people outside of Freemasonry. And we usually split it up between three charities a year. But this year, unusually, we gave all the money to the COVID fund that government had set up to try to, you know, help people who were struggling because of the COVID situation. Normally, we would give some to PALS, some to Outward Bound or Rally, some to the Women's Resource Centre or Sunshine League, those kind of things. But we split it up, give a few thousand to each. But this year we gave everything to the COVID fund.
And this has been going on a long time. I actually see that at Lodge St. George has been over the centuries, because I'm going back to a document dated the 1810, I think, where there was money gifted to education, St. George's Grammar School, for example, when a new teacher had to be found. They provided the salary of £120. I mean, that's a serious amount of money, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's not unusual. Anywhere in the world where Freemasonry exists, you'll see lots of charitable giving. And in the UK, as it's become more of a big business, there's a whole charity wing, and they supply air ambulances, you know, in the form of helicopters, sponsored fire trucks where local authorities have been unable to buy a new fire truck. There's an awful lot of big spending going on in the UK from the equivalent of the Freemasons Fund here in Bermuda. You know, we also send money each year to the Grand Almoner's charity of choice. This year was Prostate Scotland, and we sent a bunch of money to them from Lodge St. George. But we also do our best to support the hospital whenever they need little things, particularly for the paediatrics ward. And we've given to a number of other local charities.
Well, I thank you, because this has been going on since the end of the 18th century. So that is a huge amount of 300 years of giving, which is amazing. So I'm interested in talking to you about the royals and visits to Bermuda. And I know your guest book has some fabulous comments.
We have a Masonic Bible that is, we know we purchased it in 1797, but we got it. It was printed in 1794. It's a very large volume. And on the inside front pages were a number of blanks. And so they've been used for, as you say, a guest book. So high-ranking Masonic figures have signed it when they visited, but also we have one page that is just the current royal family, and it's got Her Majesty the Queen signed it in 1952, along with Prince Philip, and since then Prince Charles, who came in 74 when the building was rebuilt to the original specifications. This is the old state house we're talking about. So they rebuilt it to look like the original old state house. And he presided over the rededication, and he signed the book then. And since then, Andrew, Edward have both signed it. We haven't got any of the younger royals to sign it yet, but we're hopeful that in future royal visits we'll manage to get them up to the lodge and to sign our Bible.
Wow, that's fabulous. Yeah, the children are her ambassadors, aren't they? So I'm just going to move on.
None of them are Freemasons, though, currently. Prince Philip is.
Philip is, yes. Philip is,
but none of the children are currently Freemasons. The Grand Master, as I said, is a member of the royal family, and he's getting on. So at some point, someone else younger will have to take that role, and it may well be one of the princes. We don't know yet.
Tell us about the peppercorn ceremony. When did it start, and what's behind this?
Right, so 1797, we get the charter, and Lodge St. George is meeting in people's front rooms and upstairs at the White Horse Tavern and various other places, which at the time was quite a common way to do it. Most lodges around the world didn't have their own buildings. They would rent somewhere or use somebody's premise, and they would set up the lodge within that room. But it started to become more the norm to have a standalone building for Masonic purposes. And so the lodge got some money together, and they purchased a lot of property. This is probably 1810 we're talking now, so about 15 years after we started. They purchased a lot of property in the town of St. George, which is next door to where the current supermarket is, for those of you who know the town of St. George, the little summer supermarket. And they purchased this, and they did up this beautiful engraved cornerstone, which was laid with full Masonic ceremony. And then they set about starting to raise the money to raise a building on that spot. In 1815, the decision was taken by the government of Bermuda to move the capital city from the town of St. George's, where it had always been, to the city of Hamilton, the newly created city of Hamilton, and make that the capital. Now, at that time, the old state house had been the center of the town business. It was the town hall. It was the courts. It was a place where you had functions. At some points, it had been a barracks for soldiers and a store for gunpowder. It had been everything to everybody, but it was still being used as the seat of government for the island. But they decided they were moving the capital, so the seat of government went with that. And all of a sudden, you had this building that had been everything to everyone, and it was going to be empty. The governor at the time was a Freemason. You know, we should put that out there. He made the decision that to offer it to Lodge St. George as a meeting place so that it would still be used. And he did that on a lease of one peppercorn, which in those days was quite a normal thing. And it's still in legal terms, as you will know, being a trained lawyer yourself, a peppercorn rent is still a thing. You know, it means if it's a $1 transaction, it's a
valuable consideration.
There's the word. So in those days, peppercorns actually had quite a lot of value. It wasn't quite the less valuable thing that is now. I mean, you can go down to the supermarket and buy yourself a pot full of them for a couple of dollars, but you certainly couldn't in those days. You know, peppercorn was something that you had to have imported and you needed peppercorn. So anyway, one peppercorn was set as the rent in perpetuity, as long as the Corporation of St. George was holders of that lease for the lodge. And we have held that lease and met in that building now since 1815. Every Tuesday following the full of the moon is when we meet. And the full of the moon thing, we think, is because when it was originally done, people still had to get there by boat. You could row across the harbour a lot easier when the full moon was out than you could if it was a no moon. So they stuck with the Tuesday following the full of the moon so there'd still be enough light for people to travel easily to and from Lodge.
A lot of wisdom with the moonlight. I used to live on one of the islands in Great Sound, and my mother was visiting, and we went to bingo at Spanish Point, and it was no moonlight. So I was trying to line up with the lighthouse and ended up in a bay ringed in rocks. I just backed out, hoping I hadn't gone off course. But I tell you, I had a lot of respect for nights that had a full moon.
Big difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in those days, Phoenix
Lodge meets on the Tuesday following the full moon. So it's one after the other. So we don't meet on the same night. Obviously, because people such as Brother Fisher that you mentioned earlier on were master of both lodges. And Brother Fisher was the first master of Lodge St. George, I might add.
Thank you. So I'm going to move on to the Knights Templar. I will probably pop a chart in my notes of how the structure looks.
I may be able to send you something to save you.
I would be grateful. I want to make sure it's correct. So with the Bermuda Freemasonry Lodges evolving over the 18th century, with the hierarchy moving up, they needed a Knights Templar. So basically, following the American Revolution, 1765 to 1783, which Bermuda had a critical part in, there was an extraordinary growth in the fraternity, wasn't there, and including the American fraternity as well. So could you just update us on what's happening with the Knights Templar?
So the Knights Templar, in the Masonic sense, is what we know as a side order. So you can progress through various different orders in Freemasonry. Go back and do the start. So when you join Freemasonry, you join as a first degree Freemason, an entered apprentice Freemason. You can then do the second degree and the third degree, which is the highest degree in regular Freemasonry. And the third degree is why we use it as a term when you say, I'm going to give you the third degree. Well, that's a Masonic term and it's fallen into regular language. But anyway, 3 degrees in Freemasonry. You can then opt to go into other degrees in other orders. So the first one you're allowed to join is called the Royal Arch, which is the 4th, 5th, and 6th. There are the Mark degree. There is the Cryptic Council degrees. There are the Allied Masonic degrees. There's the Scarlet Cord degrees. There is the Royal Arch Mariner degrees. But there's also the Knights Templar degrees. And there is the Knights of Malta and the Knights Templar itself. That's a very shortened version of the full name, which is the Masonic. I can't even remember the whole thing. It's been a while since I've been to a Knights Templar meeting, but it is one of our side degrees. You have to be a professed Trinitarian Christian to join, so it's not open to all Freemasons. And a lot of those ones I just listed off are also restricted to the Trinitarian Christian faith. But there are plenty of other orders you can join without being a Trinitarian Christian. Knights Templar is one of the higher degrees. And so in years gone by, you would have had to have jumped other hurdles, gone through other hoops, if you like, in order to join. You couldn't just become a Master Mason, which is the third degree, and then suddenly join the Knights Templar. But things have changed, and you nowadays can join most side orders reasonably quickly in your Masonic career. But there's an expectation that you know what you're doing, because we are an initiatory society and there is a lot of ritual involved, aside from what we do in philanthropy. Our meetings consist of a lot of ritual, and all that ritual has to be learnt by rote. You can't read it. It has to be remembered. You have to memorize everything. And so you have to be able to demonstrate that you are skilled in this area. And it does do amazing things to your brain, learning Masonic ritual. I was 37 years old, and I remember coming into my first meeting and listening to these guys and thinking, where are they reading this all from? And then realizing that they were doing it from memory and thinking, I'm 37 years old. I'm never, ever going to be able to do that. But they start you off right at the start with having to learn things in order to progress to the next degree. But as it went on, it actually trains your brain. All this stuff about you can't teach an old dog new tricks, utter rubbish. My memory and ability to remember and recite things word perfectly has increased dramatically since I joined the Freemasons. And it's helped me in so many ways in my life. You know, go into a job interview and have a certain amount of things you want to say. You don't have to write them down in front of you because you can use what they call a memory palace and put it in your head and use it. And it increases your ability to be able to speak publicly, to be able to speak off the cuff on topics that you know something about without having to constantly look down at a piece of paper. And in my day job, that's been very useful for press conferences and chairing meetings where I don't have to constantly look at notes. And it's the skill I've developed through being a member of Freemasons Lodge. So getting back to the Knights Templar, they wear a lot of interesting clothing. You know, there's lots of pageantry involved. And I think that's what a lot of people join the Knights Templar for. There is connections with the original Knights Templar. There's a lot of current writing out there and that you can the view that would suggest that all of our Masonic rituals are derived from the rituals practiced by the Knights Templar in the 1300s prior to their suppression, because there's an awful lot of missing information. After they were suppressed in France and then other countries, Scotland was one of the few countries in the world that said, no, we're not doing that. And it is thought that a lot of Knights Templar, when the Knights Templar fleet left port in France and suddenly went missing, that it went to Scotland, and that's where they all went. There's a lot of gravestones there that seem to indicate that the persons there were Knights Templar, but then they disappeared off of the face of the earth, if you like, only to be replaced by another initiatory society, the Freemasons. And certainly there is a lot of historical writing and a lot of considered thought by researchers that would lead us to believe that our ritual didn't just get made up in the 1700s, that it came from the ritual practiced by the Knights Templar, which goes back to the 1100s, early 1200s, and who knows where it came from before that. Because again, there's lots of interesting reading about what they found underneath the stables in Jerusalem when they were digging and what they actually did, as opposed to what their traditional history says they did, i.e. guard pilgrims traveling the route to Jerusalem, as opposed to what they were actually doing. So there's lots of interesting reading out there. And I think joining Freemasonry for me opened me up to that reading and to questioning the history that we are taught in school, or taught the history that perhaps the Christian church teaches us about the last few centuries and what other things could have actually influenced things, and particularly the Knights Templar is fascinating reading, fascinating stuff out there, and the connections with Freemasonry equally fascinating. And I think that's what's kept me involved, is that interest in the history and the inquiring mind that you get when you start to hear other possible timelines and other possible histories about how things came to be.
I totally agree with you. It was because I was doing my master's in philanthropy at Indiana Purdue, at the Center on Philanthropy, which is now the Lilly Family School, I decided to look at the period 1700 to 1900. And of course, all my work has been in international business. So following the traces of history back, the Knights Templar are credited with starting the banking system with encrypted letters of credit. And then if you look at Friday the 13th, that was a paper.
The reason why that's,
that was the Pope set down that they all needed to be annihilated. And of course, and the lawyers took over the temples.
Charles the Simple, and they were all broke. And they saw all that money in the hands of the Templars. So let's call them heretics and burn them at the stake, and we'll take it all.
Absolutely. Now, you're also a member of the Shriners. Could you tell us what that is? Because that is something, I know nothing about.
That's my fez. So Shriners are the guys in the fezzes. They're the guys who wear the red hats. Now, to be a Shriner, you have to be a Master Mason. I'm a member of Mecca Shriners, which is the original shrine that started in New York City in the 1800s. And it really is designed to be a fun, it's another one of those side orders, like I talked about, like the Knights Templar, but it's designed more for fun and a little less serious than the Knights Templar and some of the others. But its main thrust is its charity side, more so than any other part of Freemasonry. It really is just designed to try to raise money for charity. And its charity is the Shriners Hospitals for Children, which are dotted across the States and Canada. And there's one in Mexico, I think, now. And all money raised through the activities of Shriners is funneled to those hospitals or to the process of getting patients to those hospitals. So every shrine has a number of clubs that for various different things, including clowns, because there are shrine circuses in the States. And for those, anyone who's lived in the States will know that there are shrine parks, there are Shriners stadiums, there are Shriners auditoriums, all paid for and all money-raising ways for the Shriners to contribute to both their local society, but also to the Shriners hospitals. And those hospitals to treat particularly burns victims and kids who have got missing limbs or spinal injuries. Each hospital has a specialty, but they're all about kids and they're all free. So if you qualify, the type of situation that the child has qualifies for the free treatment, then everything from then on is free. So transportation to and from the hospital is paid for by the local club. So say we had someone in Bermuda, and this has happened, a young man a few years ago got in a motorcycle accident. His motorcycle went up in flames with him still laying on it, a young man named Dijon. Quite a popular young man in social media. He runs Burmese. Lovely guy. Anyway, Dijon was badly injured, very, very badly injured by fire, burns all over his body. The local shrine club, of which I'm currently the president, paid for all of his transportation and for his mum's transportation up to the States, to the Burns Hospital, the Shriners Hospital, where all his treatment was paid for by the Shriners. So his whole recovery was paid for. He didn't have to pay anything for that. And we paid here locally. We just dealt with the transportation side of it. But if it happened in the States, they have like little minibuses. Each shrine club has a minibus and they are involved in transporting people from where they live to the nearest shrine hospital for treatment.
My gracious, I am very grateful for the presence of the groups, the voluntary associations in the world, and for yourself and your group's presence. Thank you so much for such a big contribution.
And we, the Shrine Club in Bermuda, recently gave $5,000 to the Family Centre to help them with the COVID situation, as we're not able, we don't currently have any Bermudians or Bermuda residents who've required hospital treatment in the States. So we took the money that we've been saving up for that. We kept some just in case we get somebody. But we took a big chunk of that and gave it to the Family Centre to help with kids in Bermuda, because it's about kids. Very much the whole Shriners charitable side is about helping children, as I said, with burns, cleft palates, prosthetic limbs, and spinal injuries.
So from my research, Martin, I could see, and this is 1700 to 1900, that at the turn of the century, there would be a big drop-off in membership. And usually around each decade, there'd be another drop. So we're in the 21st century. So we've had 2000, 2020, 2010, 2010, 2020. Have you seen this happening as well?
No, if anything, we've seen an uptick in recent years. It's thought that things like wars tend to change the way people join things. People come back from the military and all of a sudden find themselves rudderless, if you like. They're used to being longing to something. And so after the First World War, we saw a big boom. After the Second World War, we saw an enormous boom of people joining. But in the modern age where there's so many other ways to entertain yourself, people are less into joining this. And this is not just Freemasonry, you know, the Rotary's finding this, things like the regiment here with the volunteers, the Bermuda Reserve Police, all struggling to get people out of their houses and away from their devices and away from their cable TV and joining things. But what we've discovered in Freemasonry, particularly in Lodge St. George, is that a lot of people have come to us saying, I want a sense of belonging. My grandfather belonged to this lodge, I think, and I want to be part of that. My dad wanted nothing to do with it, but my granddad was in this. My great-grandfather was in this. I want to know what it was. And the getting dressed up to come to meetings thing is also huge for this younger generation. And again, I don't know why that is, what they're looking to get. But because I guess nowadays when you go to work, most people dress casually and no one gets that reason to dress up. And we, a lot of our meetings, we expect people to dress certainly in a suit and tie. And some meetings you're expected to wear a tuxedo with a bow tie and everything. And where else do you go in Bermuda right now where you're going to be expected to wear a bow tie? But these young guys, you know, they're in their 30s, most of them, really into it. I mean, I joined Lodge St. George in 1997, and I was 37 years old, and I was by far and away the young guy in the room. Most of the people there were in their 60s, 70s. I felt, wow, these guys have been doing this forever. The average age in Lodge St. George right now is 35. But 10 years ago, it was still in the 60s. So it's just changed dramatically. We've got all these young guys who are just really interested in joining this. So I'm currently mentoring a young man who got in a lot of trouble in his youth. If you looked at him, he's got all the tattoos everywhere. And, you know, he did time in prison when he was a teenager. I'm mentoring him to join the lodge because he's decided now, at the age of 30-something, that he wants something more in life, that he wants to meet a group of people that are not going to get him into trouble, that are going to do the opposite of that, that are going to make him belong to something where he's got to turn up on time to things, where he's got to dress properly, where he's got to speak properly. And that's what he's looking for. And that's why he's asked me to join Lodge St. George.
And it's a lost art to find a man who knows how to polish his shoes, get dressed up, speak well and have a conversation respectfully. I've worked very hard on the males in my family to make sure they know how to treat a woman and speak respectfully.
Everyone who's in the Freemasons Lodge knows those things.
Exactly.
They might not do it in their day. You might not see it when they go to work. For instance, I had a very embarrassing situation a few months ago where I was going to a liquor store on Front Street and there was this scruffy Rastafarian guy with his locks out and his paint-splattered overalls, and he held the door open for me. And I said, oh, thank you. He said, that's okay, my brother. It's good to see you outside of Lodge. What? I didn't recognize him at all, because when he comes to Lodge, he's got a three-piece tuxedo on, bow tie, his locks are all tied up, he's scrubbed clean, looked completely different. And I just, oh, wow. I never would have known it was the same guy. But when he comes to Lodge, everything is creased, you know, properly. Yeah, you can tell the Freemasons amongst us when it's time to get dressed up properly and to know how to speak to people and to know how to be respectful, because we teach all of that stuff. The big thing, when people say, what is Freemasonry about? You might say, well, there's a charitable part to it. But the big thing that we tell people when they ask us what Freemasonry is about is it's making good men better. So we can't take someone who's not a good man. If you're not a good man, we don't want you. But if you're a good man, we want you and we want to make you better.
Perfect last words. Thank you so much, Martin Weeks. I'm really grateful. And sure, there are many of us that appreciate the influence and impact you're having on making good men.
We're certainly trying. There is plenty of stuff on the internet, but I would suggest the best place to start is on either the Grand Lodge of England, Grand Lodge of Scotland, or Grand Lodge of Ireland webpage, rather than just type Freemasonry in, because you'll find all kinds of conspiracy theories and things that talk about how we're running the world and how we're tied in with the Jews to do things. And let me tell you, it doesn't matter what religion you are, we'll accept you in Freemasonry as long as you believe in a higher power. So there's no religion involved. It's all about good men and making those good men better. So start off with the Grand Lodge website. So if you live in the States, the Grand Lodge of whichever state you live in, go to that website first, reach out on the contact thing and ask someone about it. And like me, they'll be very happy to talk about it. We're not a secret society. We are a society with secrets.
Dr. Michelle St. Jane is a conscious steward of meaningful leadership in the world and the wider cosmos. Tune in every Thursday for real talk around life, leadership, and your conscious journey. Be ready to create and cultivate your dreams and so hard at desires. Your support is valued. Please subscribe, leave a review and a rating, but more importantly, share with your connections.